Keep on riding with us as we continue to broadcast the balance and defend the discourse from the Hip Hop Weekly studios. Welcome back to Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja, and I am, at least for now, still Q Ward.
Well, we'll keep on keeping on, Q. For those who have been listening, we are still joined by the lovely Siobhan Arline Bradley, President and CEO of the National Council of Negro Women. For those just tuning in, I promise you are in for a treat. We have been having some very important conversations about not only this organization, but about Black women, Black women's role in society, how Black women have been and continue to be the backbone of our democracy. And I think cultivating a deeper level of respect for Black women. On this show, often we say that being close to a Black woman is about as close to God as you'll ever be on planet
Earth. Amen. Amen.
And I think that you're making our case for us today. So we, again, thank you for your time. But before we get back to the conversation, let's discuss BABA, Becoming a Better Ally, BABA. And today's BABA is sponsored by Friends of the Movement. And you can sign up for the free voter wallet from FOTMglobal.com to support Black businesses and allied businesses, as well as make an impact with your spending. Again, that's FOTMglobal.com. And today, if you wish to become a better ally, we are asking you to donate money to the National Council of Negro Women. And you can do that at ncnw.org. Every donation makes an impact on the lives of women of African descent, their families, and their communities around the world. Donors like you can join the ranks of the President's Circle today with an annual gift of $1,000 or more, or an $83 pledge per month. But I promise you don't need to spend that much money to donate, to make an impact, and to make a difference. Your generosity, no matter the amount, allows NCNW to continue to grow the scope and impact of their programs and their advocacy. So we are going to thank you in advance for your generosity in giving to this dynamic organization. And just so you know, some of their programs are programs that we feel very strongly about on this show. Those programs include economic empowerment and entrepreneurship for Black women. Again, a mantra, a motif on this show is listen to Black women, support Black women, right? We feel that Black women are our heroes, or rather our sheroes. And your support of Black women certainly goes a long way, and it is consistent with the spirit and intentionality and the thrust of this show. Other initiatives include health equity and social justice programs as well. And so again, we implore you to check out ncnw.org and make a donation to the National Council of Negro Women. Again, ncnw.org. All right. Siobhan Arline Bradley, let's get back to our conversation. Did you like that? Okay, that's a thumbs up for those that can't see.
Loved it. Okay. I'm going to have to hire you guys.
Okay, all right. So I wanted to talk a bit about voter suppression initiatives. Now, to be fair, we haven't discussed voter suppression initiatives on this show in some time. And I think it's about time that we get back on that, identifying how it could look and things that people can do to push back. Those who are a little bit more cut from the activist cloth. Not everybody's going to be able to push back against voter suppression initiatives, but everybody should know about this so that they can navigate these waters. So would you, for our audience, define, in your own words, what voter suppression initiatives are, or otherwise how they could look?
So voter suppression itself, we need to also define too. I think sometimes folks don't really understand what that means. Those are concerted efforts, sometimes by way of the law, sometimes by way of a civilian action that prohibit an individual from accessing their right to vote, whether it be physical barriers, whether it be, for example, there were tactics that used to be used back in the day where they would use voter intimidation by intimidating people to not show up. Some tactics that are still used are by putting out false announcements about the location of voter sites. So they'll send out one location when your actual precinct is in another location. Those are specific tactics. When it's by law, though, I think about the states of like Georgia and Texas. Right now, Georgia is one of those states that has voter suppression laws that have actually put barriers towards supporting voter access For persons that may, you know, have one big one that really was a big one for everybody was you could not serve water to people in line, or you cannot provide food for those that have long lines. Think about the lines in Georgia in 2020, 4, 6, 7 hours. And you think about seniors who have to stand in line for hours. So there were specific suppression laws that stated that any entity or organization that provide that kind of support would actually be in violation of the law. I think some of the other tactics that we have seen that have been really kind of scary has been, you know, changing early voting dates, removing Sunday voting, which was major for Black communities. These are tactics that people use and sometimes lawmakers use to suppress votes. In response to that, many organizations have partnered. I'm a member of a number of organizations that have provided the kind of on the line targets where we will provide food in the right amount of space between a precinct and a location. People can come get their snacks and then go stand in line. Poll workers have been a part of our voter suppression response, where we're getting more Black women, Black men, persons of color to actually serve as poll workers to watch the election processes. Again, that's nonpartisan. It's an opportunity for individuals to serve their country by being someone that visually looks at the way that people are scanning to make sure that there's no any challenges that are happening behind the scenes. One other real big one has been voter protection, where there's the 1-866 My Vote. That is where we have a lot of folks that can actually call a hotline to say, if you are in the middle of your voting process, someone stands in the way of that, someone says they need an ID, you know they don't need it, you are able to call, and we have literally hundreds of thousands of lawyers and leaders that have been on tap on election day to ensure that their responses to those precincts, and they are submitted to their Secretary of State, and we are really looking for organizations and folks on the ground to be able to follow up on those kinds of opportunities.
So there's another thing that I think exists in this space too. And you can help me because, again, we haven't really covered it recently enough, but I feel like you might have a little bit more on it. I remember coming across some information, and this might not be in every state, but I do remember coming across some information, and I believe Georgia was one of those places, and I feel like Texas was too, where depending on the distribution of the population, the racial makeup of the population of a certain part of town, there was greater access to polling places in neighborhoods and districts where the population skewed a little bit more white, and there was less access. And indeed, there was efforts to close additional polling places in neighborhoods where the browner skinned people lived. And that felt like it might qualify. Maybe that's not voter suppression, or maybe that's a higher level. Okay, so
it's
please.
Voter suppression.
Please. So
it is voter suppression. Those are the tactics that we're talking about. I mean, what happens is, let's be honest, there are lawmakers that saw and have seen voter turnout increase in places that did not want it to increase. You say the name or named state of Georgia, and you know democracy shifted in 2020, mm-hmm. right? And that's because of those long lines. That's because of the commitment of the people that were on the ground. But then immediately following, you saw some of those same laws that were in place for early voting, for opportunities to ensure that there were appropriate messaging being put out. Now you have the counter to that. So these are very clear intended tactics where they say, well, look, redlining and looking at redistricting where people are voting, how districts changed. Well, guess what? They'll change the precinct locations in those spaces or close polls or close them early. Right? You think about it. Like, every worker does not have the election day off. Right? So within those time frames of people voting, these are ways that people actually get pulled from having the ability to vote. And I want you to understand, this is not a made up thing. We're not paranoid here. This has been happening for decades in this country. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it now as we're preparing for 2024. That's why we have to have a massive amount of leaders in place for voter protection.
I'm so glad you said that. We are not paranoid. It is not our imagination. Not this is real.
It's real now, stuff.
Earlier in our conversation, you did this, and we all went back to church. We all, it felt like Sunday morning service all over again. Tell us a little bit about the way that your ministry has influenced you as a leader in your role with NCNW.
Wow. You made me cry. You made me cry on the show. You know what? It has, quite frankly, for me, been the reason why I am who I am. I believe that everyone is called for everything, right? I think we're all called to an assignment. No matter your religious persuasion, you can't get me to not believe that there's something greater than all of us that has put us on this earth. Like, you two are called, assigned, and it comes out in very different forms. I believe that I'm called to be a voice of reason for multiple generations. Like, I'm a Gen Xer, right? So, you know, I grew up, born in the late 70s, grew up in the 80s and 90s, college in the 90s, hip-hop girl. Well, I can speak to a millennial. I can speak to a Gen Z. Mm-hmm. But I'm also was raised by the old school, right? Yes, the boomers and our grandparents, my parents, who were in that generation of grind and grit and get it done and fight and be the first so that you can have this runway. So I have such a reverence for the way that faith traditions have taught us stuff, like old school. A lot of us did our first speeches in church.
Yes, indeed.
Ooh, you're right. You had to learn how to memorize. And I mean, this was the way that they built intellect, and that is through the faith tradition. I just so happen to be a preacher, go figure. But that is a part of what I believe God called me to be. And I think the other thing about my faith is that my faith does not allow me to have a lot of fear. Like, I'll share like a real thing with you. Like, we really have dealt with the realities of what it means to be in social justice, right? Security issues, people calling your name in places that you never thought you'd be called in, the anger, the hate that comes your way.
Yeah.
It takes your faith to keep you going. Mm-hmm. It takes your faith to not knock somebody out, right? It takes your faith. Come on. To
in
really
his mighty name.
In a way.
Put hands on you in the name.
It's a real thing. And I just honestly, I want to publicly thank God because, one, I'm still living. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm in a seat that's a heavy seat, but also that I'm relevant enough in this moment to help bring people together and bring generations together. Because I know if Black people intergenerationally literally align, there's no fight we haven't won. Like, I'm committed to that. And I believe that's by the grace of God, literally.
Well, before Rams jumps back in, I just want you to know your crown is on straight. You're sitting in that seat. You're owning that role. And you got some brothers here to support you.
All day.
It takes a brother to tell you sometimes. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, for our listeners that may not know this, and I certainly appreciate you bringing that to this conversation because, you know, I mentioned to you that my father and his father were ministers. We're both preachers' kids. Q's has the same story. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, I know that a lot of people are listening to our show on hip hop stations and so forth. So these conversations don't come up all that often. But for Black people, faith tradition also is almost a one-to-one overlap of our political tradition, our political alignment. The griots, the great speakers, the intellectual minds of our community, oftentimes it goes right into the pulpit of a church. These are the people that organize and galvanize the Black communities around the country. Right. And it's very important for our listeners to know that the connection there is that we go to church not just to get, you know, spirituality and fellowship and so forth, but to be informed. Politicians that are worth their weight in that arena will go if they want the Black vote. You'll see them all in a pulpit of a Black church at some point. And there's no two ways about it, right? And so it's really important to make sure that I'm glad that you brought that up, that connective tissue is now pronounced for the benefit of our listeners, that you are not only a leader, you know, of this incredible organization. Wow. This is a part of our culture. This was a part of my culture before I was born, and you're the president of it.
It's crazy,
right?
And honestly, what blows my mind, I don't mean to cut you off, but I gotta give you this love in this moment. Dorothy Height was the only woman in the Big Six.
Okay.
So you think about the Big Six, for people that are listening, that's the NAACP, the Urban League, right? Mm-hmm. These leaders that were named leaders, they were all men. And what makes this moment beautiful between us is that there is an acknowledgement of the beauty of leading in this moment, but also leading in a place also that's been oppressed inside of our own culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's not act like Black women have been at the forefront, even in church. There's still places where I gotta wear a skirt. There's still places that I can't go in a pulpit and I'm ordained and have more degrees than the men that are standing. And I think that that is the beauty of the platform that you yield, because for me, it's bigger than the place. It's about the calling. So I just want to honor that moment.
Yeah, I'm listening to you say that. And my mother ordained as well, associate pastor in my church growing up. And we still go places where they don't want to call her reverend.
No, they don't. They call her sister.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm listening to your story and it's hitting home in a very personal way.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's important for you to know, and our longtime listeners may know this, but, you know, newer listeners, it's important for them to know as well that this show was founded on amplifying voices. We are one thing you'll never get from us is we think like, yeah, we're special. You know, no, we just happen to have the stage.
Yeah.
And there are people that are more qualified to have conversations and invite people into an emotional space than we are. And so we kind of look at it like stewardship. We built this brick by brick, but it was never, we built it for us. That's why it's not the Q Ward and Ramses Jaw show or any whatever. And, you know, that's not what it is. It's a place to engage people. And again, coming from the tradition that we came from, we were very much shaped by powerful Black women.
Yeah.
And we know that our job now and forever is to empower those people. Like I said, we look up to Black women, you know, again, as close to God as we'll ever be on planet Earth, you know. And so when I look at this organization, you know, all these organizations, like we work very closely with the NAACP. In fact, we have to go and do a panel in New Orleans for the Urban League in a couple of months, right?
Yeah.
So we work with all these organizations, but there will never be a reverence that is more pronounced than this type of reverence that we have for the work that you do. We recognize, it's our honor to amplify your messaging, because we firmly, firmly believe that by following, by speaking to, by protecting, by uplifting Black women, that everybody wins, and we want everybody to win. So indeed. I just wanted you to know that there is a soft place for that to land 10 times out of 10 on this show.
I love that.
I do want to make sure that we get some actionable elements into the conversation for the benefit of our listeners, allies, would-be allies, et cetera. So if you could move everyone listening to your voice today to do a thing, one thing, and it can be a hard thing, but let's not make it 10, let's not make it 20, because, you know, it might overwhelm people, certainly in this format. But if you could move everybody to do one thing, what would that be and why?
Do not stay on your couch on election day. I just got to say it, right? I got to say the elephant in the room. We talked about it earlier, and I don't want to miss the moment here.
Mm-hmm.
There are justifiable concerns across the board from every generation about where we see our country going. The challenge that I have with this attitude of, well, I'm going to stand down because my vote counts, or I'm going to stand down in protest, is that you're protesting your own interests. You're protesting your own opportunities to have voice and place and space. And that vote not voting is actually counter to what can bring liberation to us as a people. And let me be clear. This is not just a presidential election year. The entire U.S. House of Representatives is up for election. Like, I don't think people are really thinking about what this means. So everybody not showing up means you're not only going to not vote for a president, but you're also going to not vote for the people that are actually voting for that, the actual allocations of dollars and appropriations that go to your state. And then you're not going to vote for the people on the ground who are responsible for putting money, putting programs, putting access into your backyards. You're losing your power when you stay on the couch. It's a loss of power. And it's a disgrace and a spit in the face of the ancestors that took the blood, took the hits for us to even be in this moment. Like, we are in a time that we have so much access, but yet still don't realize how far away from the power base that we really need to be. Your power is in your click, and then your power is after you click. Who do you hold accountable to be able to do what we need to do to ensure our people are going to be well? So that's in every space. Don't ever turn down your voice, because that, for me, that's the ultimate disconnect from who we are as a country.
Sure. So that's about as good of advice as people can get. I don't think we could say it any better than that. I do know that there is it's a troubling time. There are a couple of candidates, both that are exceptionally unpopular in certain pockets, but
yeah,
I think you couldn't have said it better. You know, even if morally you cannot vote for a president, everybody can get it in this election cycle. So let your voice be heard, shape your reality the way that you want, and the way that you engage and the way that you take action toward that end is by voting. So yeah, let's get off the couch. Now I want to make sure that this is my ask. If I could compel our listeners to do one thing, I'm going to go back up to our Baba. Okay. Donate. Money shapes outcomes. Okay.
Yes, it does.
Donate to the National Council of Negro Women. Okay.
Please.
That's ncnw.org. Obviously, you've been able to articulate the type of work that you're doing. We salute you. We commend you for that. And again, if you're hearing the sound of my voice, please consider making a donation. Again, that's ncnw.org. With that in mind, we are going to leave it right here. I'd like to thank you again, Siobhan Arline Bradley, the president and CEO of the National Council of Negro Women, for taking the time and honoring us on our little show with your presence. It is definitely this will be a jewel in our crown.
I'm grateful. And I hope to see you guys to come join us at convention. So get ready for the invite.
We're there. And for everyone else, if you missed any part of this show, do us a favor, hit the website, civiccipher.com. You can download this program or any previous episode. You can also follow us on all social media at Civic Cipher. Be sure to hit us on YouTube. Follow us there, because we're trying to grow that space as well. You can follow me on all social media at Ramses Ja.
I am Q Ward. You can also get the podcast on Apple Podcast and iHeart Podcast.
Anywhere you want. We're going to keep it moving. Again, do us a favor, donate, ncnw.org. And until next week,
peace.